Wonder how often we stop to think about God's singers when all of God's singers get home. You know, there's a lot to think about in that very short sentence. Who are God's singers? Well, somebody would say everybody that sings God's songs would be God's singers. Is that really so? Think about that as we enter into our study and our lesson at this time. If you have your New Testament handy, I invite you to turn to the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and we're going to read chapter 12, and the last verse in that chapter. Here we find the apostle by inspiration saying, "But covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet show unto you, and yet show I unto you a more excellent way." Well, what is this more excellent way that the apostle was going to show to these brethren in the city of Corinth? "I'll show you a more excellent way." It would be interesting to make a survey and see how many different answers we get concerning that way. I'm just as satisfied I can be with getting more than one answer. And why would we get more than one answer if we really are a study of the text? A true study of the text will not grant just any answer that we might want to give. It calls for a certain specific way. Somebody immediately will say, "Well, it's Jesus Christ. There's no way we can leave him out of it. That's for sure." But that is not the answer. And if you gave simply Jesus the Christ as the answer, would your answer be correct? No. Yes. We can't leave him out. Therefore, certainly, we'd have to consider the fact that he is the way. For he said, according to the Apostle of John, that "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me." So yes, he is the way. Well, somebody would say then it's the little broad or narrow way that he talked about in Matthew chapter 7. When he said there is a narrow way that leads to life eternal. That's very true, but that isn't what Paul said he was going to show the Corinthians. Just what did he say? Well, we're going to get to the answer, the true answer, the real answer that Paul had in mind that he was going to show to these Corinthian brethren. There's two reasons for this study this morning, or at any time, as far as that goes, because it is so important. It was important to the Corinthian brethren. It's important to the brethren everywhere, even yet today. And so let's see what Paul's going to tell the Corinthians. And what he told the Corinthians, he's telling us. Let me give you an example of why it's necessary that we give some consideration to what Paul was going to show these brethren at this time. Why is it important? Why should we bother with what Paul was going to tell them. Well, we need to bother because God tells us to study to show ourselves approved unto Him. And this is necessary for us to study to show ourselves approved unto God because, first of all, God said it. And secondly, what He said is very, very important because it is a way. What is a way? Well, we could say it is a course to be pursued. We could say it is what the map calls for to get to a designated or specific place. So the way then becomes very essential because it's better than anything else. It's more better. It's excellent and more excellent than any other way. So it's very important that we study to find out the proof. But one of the reasons that I want us to give some consideration to this passage is because of the importance of study. And we have to study to find out what this way is. We can't guess at it. Now, long about the early 1970s, there was a big thing take place in the state of California. And it was called a big crusade of the Church of Christ. And those who put this thing together, carried it out, took this very phrase that we're looking at in our study as the title, the heading of this big campaign all over the state of California. Yes, it did happen. We don't hear anything about it today. I don't know how long the Corinthian brethren talked about and studied about this more excellent way. But this campaign was carried out according to schedule. The way basically that it was operated, there were certain congregations of the Church of Christ throughout the state of California that brought in a big preacher to deliver the lesson concerning, I would assume, concerning a more excellent way. But I have never been able to find out that a more excellent way was talked about by any of them. But here's what we did find out, just as an example. At that time I was receiving a couple of bulletins from some of these churches. And one of them up in the big valley in the center of our city, and their bulletin, they were just carried away. Why? Did they learn something great? They thought so. What did they learn that was so great? Our televisions were converted. What was that? Our televisions were converted. Now, how could that come about? That just asks for several questions, actually. That how can a television be converted? What does it mean to be converted? That's what has to be understood in order to learn what is necessary for it to come about. There's a change that has to be made in a conversion. Well, now, what change is a television going to make? Maybe that's what happened to ours. There was a change made. No, the sound just quit coming through it. almost a brand new television. There was a change made. Would you say it was converted? If so, what converted him? I'd like to know that so I could fix it. I don't know what it was. But what it takes for conversions in order to the Lord is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, do you suppose the gospel of Jesus Christ was preached to the televisions? That's just plain nonsense, isn't it? Plain nonsense. Televisions don't need that conversion to Christ. It's just like we hear the word Christian used in a bad way all the time. We hear about a Christian college, or about a Christian this or a Christian that, and this and that and the colleges cannot be converted any more than this holder for the computer can be converted. The gospel is run through it by Tom twice every week. And it's still a converter, just like it was before it was ever turned on. Hasn't been converted yet. But the truth of the matter is, it cannot be converted by all of the truth that Tom has preached through that computer. Because the computer was not made to be converted. You, me, and everybody else was made by Almighty God to be converted. That's what the gospel of Jesus Christ was given for. That's what Jesus died for. That we could be changed from simply an animal, just a physical life, to a child of God, a spiritual life. The three brethren and myself, or we were living at that time, decided we would go to the to hear a fellow who was at that time president of Pepperdine College, see what he had to say. What's that more excellent way is all about? He spent exactly 45 minutes in telling quite a large audience how he was taught to tie his tie around the upper part of his leg. Now think about that. 45 minutes to tie his necktie around his leg. Well, now, how do we get a more excellent way out of that? That beats me. That beats me. That's where study comes in, you see. Do we find any of what I have just said so far in the text? No, the text begins back in chapter 12 for what he's having to talk about in the last verse of chapter 12, and it concludes in the last verse of chapter 14. And in that text, God, through the Apostle Paul, told those folks and is telling us what the excellent way is. Now there are folks who take a choice of pursuing a different way than that which for which Jesus died. And We hear them described in different terms. I'll just use simply one that is probably the most common. This lesson was given by the Apostle Paul to God's people in the city of Corinth. Why? You can start in 1st 1, chapter 1, and find out why all the way through 1st Corinthians and actually into 2nd Corinthians. Because this church was actually taken over by the devil. They had become so liberal, so far as truth is concerned, that they were not even recognizing truth. So it was necessary then for them to recognize the more excellent course than they were pursuing. You know, some of these men filled the bill for what God told the Apostle Paul to teach. And that is men that arise from among you and teach things that were not the truth. What for? To draw disciples away after them. Now what does God give the gospel for? What did Jesus die for? To call people away to follow the preachers? No. To call us to Him in Christ Jesus. To save us eternally and presently from our past sins. That's what salvation is all about. But what were these people doing in Corinth that would save them? Well, here was a fellow over there in chapter 9, or chapter 8, and we find that he misused his father's wife. Was committing a very ungodly situation with her. So we remember Paul talked quite a bit about marriage and the marriage relationship. But we also find an awful lot of trouble in that congregation. But very little gospel being learned and taught. So there has to be something better than that taught. What did God send the apostles into the world for? Change televisions? What did they go out in the world for in obedience to God? Remember back over in the chapter of Matthew, Jesus told the apostles to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. What for? What's the gospel for? To brought the sinners out of their sinful condition by the blood of Jesus the Christ into the family of God and prepare them to meet God for eternity with Him in heaven. That's what they went out into the world to preach and to teach the people. We don't find that being taught by these Corinthian brethren. They were doing something else. Now then you can start back to the beginning of chapter 12. What was Paul teaching throughout this 12th chapter? A battle that was taking place in the church at Corinth. People were fussing and fighting. What were they fussing and fighting over? See who had the strongest desire. Oh. Desire for what? They all wanted to perform miracles, especially speaking in tongues. But why did Paul take care of that situation? Did he teach them something that God gave them in order to answer the problem? Well, yes, he did. But how did he begin? With them. He begun with them. They don't even know what the family of God, God's children, God's people are. So Paul takes them back to the physical person. They understand undoubtedly themselves physically and others physically because they were fighting one another because they had the desire over one another for something they had no business with. So Paul goes ahead and tells them who God has assigned to take care of that matter. That is, these miracles that they were trying to have, they have no business with. God had the men selected, like the apostles, for example. He uses them as an example to carry out this work. Not everybody has the ability to go out into all the world and preach the gospel. Now let me take just an excellent and a minute diversion right here. How many times have you heard what Jesus told the apostles to do, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, applied to you, to me, and to every child of God? Not one. He was talking specifically to the apostles. He gave them the ability to do what he was commanding them to do, to go out into all of the world and preach the gospel. Paul said God called him to be an apostle. What's an apostle? One sent. God sent the apostles to preach the gospel to the salvation of lost people. And how did he do it? Well, we see as we get down here a little deeper in this 12th chapter, he takes the human body. And he talks about how this body is made up. All different parts. Many different parts. The right hand doesn't have the ability that this one ear does. Can't hear a thing. God didn't give it that ability when he created Adam. Every part in your body has a specific purpose for being in your body. Oh, we've heard through the years many people say, well, that part doesn't have anything to do anymore, so have it taken out. Take your tonsils out, you don't need them. Well, what did God put them there for if we don't need them? We're challenging the greatest of all wisdoms. God created the man with all the parts for man to do what God would have man to do. And what did God create the man to do? Well, we find over in the book of Ecclesiastes where God says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole of man. An italicized word in the King James Version is, it's the whole duty of man. God created us because he wanted us to serve him. But there has to be a change made. What do we see in the case of the first man and woman he created? They were just as pure as the angels of heaven when God turned them loose in the garden. But they didn't stay pure long, did they? One little sin separated from God. So God wanted man brought back to him. And that all the way from that point to the last book in the book of Revelation, God was putting the course to reclaim lost man. So, all of the parts in the physical body has a purpose for the operation of the physical body. The gospel of Jesus Christ is for the operation of the spiritual being. We're dual beings. We know what we're to do physically, but how much do we know we must do spiritually? These Corinthian brethren are violating what they were doing spiritually. They didn't have any business in performing miracles because God didn't give it to them. But they were trying to get it anyway. Why don't we read over there in the book of Ephesians chapter 4, about verse 16, where there the Apostle Paul used that same figure about me and you and the church. That the church is made up of all of the members, all of the pieces of the spiritual body of Jesus the Christ. Did you ever stop to think you were a spiritual part of Jesus Christ? If you were cleansed by His blood, and you come out of the waters of baptism as Jesus was raised from the dead, you came out a spiritual being in a fleshly body. So you had a spiritual job to do in glorifying God. But it wasn't the right way to satisfy some people because they wanted to have more power than the apostles had, that God did not give to them. So, we haven't found that more excellent way yet, have we? Well, let's just continue to go a little bit further in our text. Why did he put chapter 13 in this study about? We studied chapter 12, and what he's dealing with in chapter 12, we find going over in chapter 4, but 14, but he doesn't say anything about them in 13. So what's chapter 13 here for? Well, we're not going to take the time to read it. It's a good chapter to store up here. I remember when I was before I started school, in a Bible class, where we were taught to memorize this 13th chapter. I couldn't do it now, but I could then, and I did then. But he begins this 13th chapter, right following the period of chapter 12, where he's been talking about all of these things, and he says, now I'm going to show you a more excellent way. What's chapter 13 here for? Well, go down to verse 13 in chapter 13. And we find this, and now abideth faith, hope, charity. These three, but the greatest of these is charity. What's charity? Love. Love. Agape. Why is it the more excellent way? Oh, I let the cat out of the bag, didn't I? Love is the more excellent way. And these Corinthian brethren were not exercising that love because they were fighting with each other, being selfish and greedy to have more power than the next fellow. Where's the love? Greed isn't love. But they had the greed. We must have faith to get to heaven. We must have hope to get us to heaven. But now what did he say there again? He says, now abideth faith and hope and charity, these three. But the greatest of these is charity, or love. Why? Well, the reason for it is, it has to be our motivation to do what God would have us do, because we're to love Him as He also loved us. Did you ever read and study 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John? He just really lays the hammer down on the importance of this love we're talking about. So we must love God. Very strong love. And the stronger our faith is, the stronger our love must be. When we exercise God's love, through the love that He has given us the ability to exercise as spiritual children of His, we're going to take care of a lot of things in the course of this life that we're traveling on now, fleshly. But when we get to heaven, we're not going to need hope. It's been accomplished. We're not going to need faith. It's been fulfilled. But we have just moved in with a Father who still is going to be love. And we're going to still love Him. It's going to get us there. It is a more excellent way. There it is. That's what Paul taught these brethren in the fullness of chapter 13. The more excellent way is love. Love. How faithful are we going to work to be to God without love? Not a dab. Not a dab. What kind of hope are we going to have? Oh, we'll have a hope. But it is just as empty as it can possibly be, because there's nothing to get it there. No love. Where's the faith? It's so weak, there's no possible way that it's going to finish the course. So, we have to have a strong faith. And we have to have a stronger love, because it's that strong love that we have for God that we're going to do what He commands us to do that's going to strengthen our faith. And therefore, we have and we're exercising a more excellent way. How much do you love God? Now, how much did these Corinthian brethren love Him? They didn't love Him. They had a lot of love to get what they didn't belong to them, what they didn't need. But they didn't have a love for the One who has the power to give it to them. They just didn't have it. Why? Because they didn't do what He commanded them to do, starting basically with study. Study to show yourself approved unto God. That's why we must study. So are we, are you, am I, studying the Word of God in order to be absolutely sure day by day that I still love God? Even as days come and go, I love Him even more. Because without Him, I cannot make it to heaven. And without that love, I'm not going to help you get there. I might get in your way to keep you from it. And I most surely probably would some. But I've got to love you too. And I've got to tell you what God told the apostles to do, to preach the gospel to others that they may also preach the gospel. That's what we all need. And we have it. We have it. Now, where in the world did these folks get this California campaign and find it converting televisions and learn to tie ties around one's leg? And that's just the drop in the bucket as to what we find. Now, why do we call some of the churches of Christ we see around all over the country? Why do we call them liberals? Were these folks liberal? What is it to be liberal? Politically, you recognize what's liberal and what's not. We better recognize it, because the end of our country is coming very rapidly, because people have forgotten about it, what liberal is. And they're becoming more liberal. They have less concern, less love for this great country in which God has made it so blissful for us all, that we have the right to speak. We have the right to pray. We have a right to serve Him publicly. But you don't have that in countries where that's been taken away or never given. And that's exactly where this country's headed. Same direction. In a way that is not at all sufficient. Seek that more excellent way. Hang your intent for the present and the future upon the power of your love. Love God. Love your brethren. Love yourself. How much do you love yourself? Well, John tells us a whole lot about love in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John. But we're not having time to go over and study that lesson now. But do you see the more excellent way? It's quite obvious when we study the text, isn't it? And that's what we have done. We've gone through the text. We've seen how it's been abused. And we see how that we may strengthen it by our obedience to it. Well now, how's your love? Are you ready to face God? This evening, the Lord willing, that's what we're going to talk about. Are you ready? But we just simply cannot close the door on this building without giving you a chance to make yourself right with Him. If you've been negligent toward Him, you need to make some changes in your life. He needs to be first place. First place. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, God asks and demands first place in our lives. Is He at first place in yours? Where's the love? So if there's something lacking in your course of pursuit toward that eternal goal in the home of God, don't you think it is now that you need to take advantage or take an examination of self? And if you find there's something that is lacking somewhere, to do something about it? And if we can help you in strengthening your love with God, you have that opportunity right now. We're going to stand, we're going to sing a song to encourage you to do just that. All together we stand.